Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello, everybody. Welcome. Hello. It's another show. Another show. I've made it this far. My ratings and reviews are coming through on iTunes and making me really, really happy. So I'm really, really pleased about that. Thank you so, so much if you have left a review. I'm going to read a couple of them out because it's episode 8 and that's like 2 months of me doing this. And it's gone far better than I or probably anyone else could have imagined, really. It started off as a little idea and it's grown and it's become quite popular and much loved. So thanks very much for being a part of it. I'm going to read out a couple of reviews. 5 stars, I love it. Love the idea. A breath of fresh air to listen to. Make sure you subscribe. I did. That's from Young, Free and Coupled. So whoever you are, thank you so, so much for that review. The podcast is something I could listen to for hours. The idea is great. Defo worth a subscribe. That's from Interested Listener 1. Thanks very much. If that was you that left that, that was a nice review to read. Carrie Sims. That Mr. Christopher I could listen to for hours. Can't wait for more. That's nice. I'm glad my voice isn't that annoying, my dulcet Essex tones. So yeah, anyway, like I said, it's episode 8 and I'm really pleased to bring to you today an episode all about sustainability. Going back on last week's episode, we spoke about sustainable food and sustainable eating. Because you were supposed to have a guy called Matt, but I deleted his episode. I have been in touch with Matt, and Matt is definitely up for recording again whenever he can. So that episode is not completely lost in its entirety. We will re-record that and bring that to you, because that was a really, really interesting one. But last week I brought to you a guy called Jose, and Jose has a book out. It's called Venison... The Game Larder, Venison the Game Larder. It's a series of books, so there's going to be one all about game birds and one all about game that has fur, so like rabbits and stuff. And we spoke a lot about hunting, its ethics and morals, and we've had some really nice sort of reviews and comments back on that. You know, people saying it was really, really interesting, educational and informative. It was different. At the end of the day, we don't normally kind of go on with the educational front. So far we've just spoken to people and had conversations, but Jose's one, I knew Jose and I knew what he was all about, and I knew that he could bring some conversation that would maybe change people's perception of ethical hunting. And I strongly say ethical because I don't agree with every kind of hunting out there, but hunting for a sustainable and ethical source of food, I definitely do agree with. If you haven't listened to that, go back and listen to it. It is a really long one. I do apologise about that, but I could have literally just sat and listened to Jose all day. We didn't speak about half the things I wanted to. He's got a lot of other things going on in his life outside of the hunting world, but almost 2 hours just were eaten up and went by really, really quick. So we had a good laugh doing it, and yeah, it's been getting some really lovely reviews. People, you know, that maybe don't agree with hunting and even eating meat have still been kind of giving it the nod, as if to say, you know, it was put across well. So thanks very much. We do like to see both sides of the fence. So if you're a vegan or you're anti-hunting and you want to come on the show, I invite you. That's not a problem. But today we've got a girl called Victoria. Like I said, we're going to be talking about sustainable living. Which is, it shouldn't have been really on the bounce of Jose's one, but it is. That's the way that the orders kind of come about. And yeah, we're going to talk about sustainable living. So she hails originally from Austria, and she's been over in the UK for a while, and she started to strip back and live a bit more of a sustainable life. And I first discovered her from a video that I found, and I'm going to post that video up for you now, so you can watch that after you've listened to the episode, or pause it if you need to go and watch the video. It's not overly long, and then you can come back and you can listen to all about the girl that made the video. So it's all about sustainable living, something I kind of don't know a lot about, because I couldn't survive without my iPhone, without my Mac computer. I couldn't survive without my TV and my Netflix and all of that. And she lives a much more stripped back way of life, which is interesting, because she comes originally from the fashion industry, which my perception of that industry is it's quite materialistic. So yeah, it was a really interesting conversation, and she was one of the first proper strangers that I'd interviewed. I guess I didn't know her from anyone, really. I saw a video, I liked it, I asked if she'd be on the show, and I was really lucky that she said yes, and fairly quickly, no time to really talk about it. I was sitting in her offices of where she works in London, and we were recording this episode. So yeah, I'll get into that, but before, just dropping in the website again, it's thatmrchristopher.com. all my social media links are on there, but you can follow me on Twitter at thatmrchrist. You can send me an email, podcast@thatmrchristopher.com. you can get me on facebook.com/thatmrchristopher. I'm part of loads and loads of podcasting groups, which is great, because I get loads of reviews and comments and ideas of how to make the show better, and ideas of who to get on the show as well. If you've got any ideas, do get in touch with me for any one of the means that I've just aforementioned. I want to hear who you think I should get on the show, who you think would be interesting, what types of people, demographics, etc. I've had a lot of requests for mental health and sex industry, so they're the two that I'm sort of looking for at the moment. I have found one or two people in both of those demographics that I'm going to be talking to and seeing if they want to get on a show and share their experiences and their ideas, really. But yeah, if you've got anyone else that you think, yeah, I'd quite like to listen to a bit more about that, get a bit more of an education on that subject, drop me a line, let me know, and we'll try and make it happen. Yeah, that's about it, I think, really, for now. Speaking of the Facebook groups, there's a lot of people, especially from the podcast community, have been asking me what my inspirations and ideas for the show. They've also kind of picked up on some of the bits and pieces that I've said in episodes, things like I come from a cooking background, I was a chef, and they're asking a bit more about me. Obviously the podcast isn't about me. I don't really feature my face in it too much. I have kind of plain artwork, because it's not about me, it's about the guests. But if people are asking the questions, I said that I'll answer them. So this is episode 8, and I'll tell you at the end of this episode who episode 9 is going to be, but I'm thinking I might be the guest on episode 10, and I might get someone to interview me, or I might just read out your questions. We'll see how it goes, but yeah, drop me some questions if you've got anything for me. Let me know, I'll answer anything, really. So yeah, don't be too rude or anything, but yeah, get stuck in. Here's the music and the start of the podcast. Goodbye. I'm introducing you to normal people, different lives, husbands, brothers, sisters, wives, might have a laugh, might have a cry. So if you've got the time, just sit back and relax. We're gonna have a little chat, and you don't have to answer back. You can ramble as much as you like. I've pressed record, so yeah. So Victoria, thank you very much for having me over.
You're welcome.
Because we're like you just said, we're in Chancery Lane. We're at your work. Yeah. You're a complete stranger to me. I don't know you from from the next person, really. We've met very briefly in the big world of the internet. And yeah, had a little chat. I don't really know anything about you. I've looked at briefly at your website, which I'll put a link to. So as we go through, people can have a little, if they're interested, they can click on and find out a little bit more about you and what you're doing and personally interested. But yeah, what you're personally interested in isn't what you do for a living, right?
No, it
is not. To say that you don't like your job. But
no, I love my job. But I think is everyone has to have a passion project, and that's what I'm doing. I think that's what I've come to realise after graduating. Doing something that you love whilst at your degree might not necessarily transfer into a full-time job. And a lot of people do get really depressed about that, but I just realised it's not the end. It's sort of like realisation of do what you love, but you still got your weekends, you still got your time after work, you've got your lunch breaks. And
even to the degree, like you say, you've got a website for it. Yeah. So, you know, you can make it a thing. You know, it doesn't just have to be like and in my spare time I do puzzles or play computer games. Like, you can say, like, I'm going to take this seriously, see where it goes, personally or professionally, and it's just there, isn't it? So
it is. It's keeping the momentum up, because you've got the gift of time whilst you're studying a degree. That's what I realised. When people say, oh, what do you actually do all the time? And you spend so much money and you only go in 3 times a week or so. But really what you get with the money you spend on a degree, you get time. And these are 3 years where you've got really to just chase your personal interests. And that's kind of what I've done. And I realised...
Most people spend that time drinking, though.
Yeah, well, you
know,
you do...
I didn't go to university for the exact reason that I thought I'd
do. You did own your foundation year. It's called the foundation year.
Okay.
And yeah, you keep the momentum up. And that's basically what I focus on now, which is self-sufficiency movements and off-grid living and general, like, living well.
Yeah.
And kind of exploring different life scenarios. So what I've done in my last year, I travelled to off-grid movements in Wales.
Yeah.
And also spent a few weeks up in Leicester, near Leicester, on a self-sufficiency project, which was a bit more urban. And kind of what I've done there was to explore my personal quest of, like, what makes people happy. And I kind of realised that having less and minimalising your belongings actually, you know, pays off in other ways. And I just wanted to find out for myself, okay, how do people live when they just completely neglect everything they've been taught since they were a little child? Like, you know, if consumerism, you have to have, you know, your 9-to-5 job and you have to buy things to be happy. And kind of you get further and further away from nature and from the basics. And that's something I kind of explored by talking to them, how they managed to move between their city job and then you're in a farm, on the farm, you don't have phone signal, you don't have a TV.
But I mean, you don't live like that, right?
I don't live like that at
the
moment.
So is this something that is an interest at the moment?
Yeah.
Okay. So is it an interest?
Absolutely.
Something interesting that you've observed in others and thought, hey, that's something that's making them happy. Will it work for me, or is it making you happy to document that? Because you're a little bit...
It's a mix of
both.
You've
made sort of like a documentary film, right?
Yeah, I have. And so what I've done with it, I kind of edited together the conversation I've had with people into a 20-minute documentary.
Mm.
But what I've realised in hindsight was I was so involved in learning myself about what's going on there that the documentary, in a sense, doesn't give the full picture at all. So that's something I just want to...
I mean, yeah, it's 20 minutes.
It's
bounces around in different locations and talks to a few different people.
Absolutely.
So it's not going to be any more than a snapshot of maybe living that way of life. Which
and those people are so interesting.
And,
you know, it's not your standard person. You could have a whole film just about one character in there because of their whole life story.
They are very individual.
Yeah. So they walk their own path, and that's something that I kind of want to do myself as well.
Okay.
But find the happy medium, because
I was going to say, how would you fit that in with, I mean, for context for people listening, we're in Chancery Lane, the centre of London. You're not dressed like you're not wearing a wheat skirt, and you haven't got pretty flowers and braids in your hair. You look like any other person walking around Holborn, Chancery Lane area. Mm. You're in digital marketing.
That's it, yeah.
So what's the happy medium then between living off-grid as the people do in the documentary that you've made and what I perceive you do in everyday life now, which is live a very kind of normal city life?
Yeah.
You live in London?
I'm commuting. But I think it's the main thing is taking breaks. That's what I realised.
Right.
It's like here, when you look around, it's non-stop. You have so many things to do, so many opportunities. And what I kind of realised is I need to take time for myself.
Uh-huh.
And you know, you have the whole mindfulness movement and meditation and yoga movement,
yeah,
which can also be a business. But you know, it's not just a hip thing to do. It's kind of to really incorporate it and self-care, really.
Okay.
So I might be posting on Instagram every day, but it's not. I'm not on the platform all day every day doing an endless scroll.
Yeah.
And also using it not to envy people, because that's a big thing with now. The problem with social media is that you look at someone's life and you think it's perfect.
Mm.
And you look
it's
at it.
It's what people want you to see, isn't it?
Exactly.
I mean, that's a huge part of why I decided to do the podcast.
Mm.
It's because I was getting fed up of looking in my Facebook feed and Twitter feeds and seeing either negativity, fake news, or just a vast cascade of bullshit that I just thought, that's not you, that's not
it's funny when you know the real person, yeah, and then you see their social media and you realise, oh, hold on a minute, that person I know personally and doesn't live that life, but the person I idolise and don't know personally, it's not going to be that. It's going to be always the best moments of their life.
Sure, yeah.
And at the end of the day, social media is a huge marketing tool, so you have to find your way of not falling for it.
Yeah, I wouldn't want to be without it. And I think watching the kind of short snapshot of that off-grid, sustainable way of life that you did, they weren't fully off-grid, because I don't think that's really possible for many people.
Yeah, I mean, the definition of off-grid is so they're not connected to an electricity grid, water grid and sewage system.
Okay.
However, they build their own small-scale system. So they might have, you know, wind power, solar power. In the case of Wales, they had, like, hydropower. And they had their own sewage system, in the sense of that they've got compost toilets.
Okay.
But so, like, strictly speaking, they were off the grid. But they chose to still have the modern day, you know, amenities of stuff like internet, for example. That's a huge way of how they can promote their lifestyle.
We're talking right now about Lammas.
Lammas, Eco Village Lammas, yeah.
Lammas in Wales. It's southwest, isn't it? Southwest Wales.
It's Cambridgeshire.
Sort of,
Carmarthenshire.
Yeah, they've got a website and they run Come and Learn How to Be Sustainable, or Learn How to Grow Vegetables.
Yeah, permaculture courses.
And stuff like that. So they've got an income. And obviously, to promote a way of off-grid or more sustainable living, they sort of have to go into the grid to promote it, because obviously you've got to realise that social media, the websites,
how else
like
would
that.
I have found them
exactly.
I found them because
actually
I found them for word of mouth, for someone who was also travelling around whilst I was travelling around. But obviously I then resorted to Google and then contacted them via the website. But yeah, it's definitely a thing that you kind of have to find your way through the whole, the vast social media world, really, because a lot of people just shout. See, like when you're someone like me who's a bit more, you know, calmer and, you know, mindful, and I don't like self-promotion. I do promotion for other clients, but I don't promote myself as such. It's finding that niche and also being satisfied with it. That's a whole deal as well. And I think that's one thing I've also taken away from being at Lammas, is just being satisfied with what you've got.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, just before we started this, I'd said, you know, a brief, that's what I did as a career, and this is why I started the podcast, and it was a bit of a midlife crisis, and it was a case of getting to a stage where I set up various businesses, and it was always chasing
I'd say money, but that was a scorecard or a benchmark of success rather than I can buy stuff.
Yeah, because it's what you're told.
Because I was interested and personally interested in business and wanting to go off and say, well, I want to be successful. And that comes in loads of different guises, whether it's going to university and get a first, or whether it's doing a job and just doing it the best you can do. So I kind of got really caught up in just work, and started to not be satisfied, because it was like, yeah, I'm just focusing on one thing. And that's not to say that being in business or working for yourself or working for someone else, they're good or bad things. The bad thing was that I was losing focus of potential other things that could enter my life, you know, because I wasn't stopping. It sort of, I don't know, I just took a bit of a moment to have a breather and take stock and go, well, I've got a son that I could probably spend a bit more quality time with. And, you know, I've got friends coming out of my ears, but they're not really friends, they're more acquaintances, they're Facebook friends, you know, they're people that I know, I've worked with, and haven't really gotten to know. And that was sort of...
That's a big thing, isn't it?
And it was just a case of, I want to live a bit more simply. I'm not going to start making my own clothes or wearing tie-dye. It's just not going to happen for me.
Because, I mean, that's what a lot of people think is really intimidating, the idea of, like, they are so happy, they're just living off the land. But I could never do that.
Right.
So, and that's one thing
and
that
it's not
I
your
want.
Radar
no,
or a goal for you, so.
No, because I'm just. I know that I love being there, but I couldn't see myself living there at the moment. Like right now, it's just for me to explore different ways of life. There's so many other off-grid developments, and I mean, there's the whole tiny house movement, the van life movement. Two things that I really, I'm really interested in, because again, it's people scaling down. And just the whole idea of just like having less stuff and having less worries attached to it.
Okay.
Because I mean, what is the biggest thing that worries people? Why? What keeps people in their situations, whether it be jobs or living situations, is because they think then they might be homeless, or then they couldn't afford the certain things that society tells them they have to be able to afford.
Yeah, okay.
And then hearing stories about people who worked up the courage of doing it. And I mean, I know myself, I've moved from Austria over to England 5 years ago, and that was a big thing, you know.
I was going to say, I was going to ask you about your sort of Victoria with a K, not a C, and your surname. How are you saying that then in Austrian?
Erlacher. Yeah.
Okay.
So it's just... You know, and that was something which was more achievable, because it was for the ultimate goal to go to university.
Yeah.
So people could get their heads around it, because they were like, oh, she's doing it because she goes to university. Whereas obviously if I would have done it and said, oh, I'm just going to move over because I just want to explore it, that's a whole different thing. And I think that's what really keeps people from listening to their guts and doing it. Just... society, you don't have an excuse. I think that's it, the biggest thing. Like, you don't have an excuse, you don't have like something, a certificate at the end of it, whereas you might be learning a lot more than you would do at university.
Okay, so where are you now in terms of your goal of personally living a little bit more sustainable, or I don't know, freer, for some of the just want of a better word, because you've just said you don't want to live in a hut off-grid completely.
Exactly. So, I mean, my stage
where
is...
Where are you now, and what is exactly what you want to do?
I mean, I'm a bit more of a minimalist. I have, like, a minimalist approach to things. So
what kind of things?
Everything.
Do you have a TV?
I do have a TV. I do have a laptop. I could live without a TV.
Yeah.
But obviously, you know...
I couldn't.
Because I mean, you can watch it on your phone and on your iPad, but
so
it is
get
something.
Rid of a phone, you wouldn't get rid of an iPad or a laptop.
I might do.
Yeah.
That's one thing. Obviously, I started because my background is fashion. Mm-hmm. The biggest thing I did.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Was get rid of a lot of my clothes and scale it down, and you know, you have the
because fashion is a materialistic world.
It is,
really.
And it's the funny thing is, it's the second most polluting industry out there. So
it
for me,
in what way?
Like, you know, the first one is oil, and the second is obviously textiles because of all the energy that goes into it, the landfill that's being created.
I have no idea.
I suppose people that work in fashion tend to know a little bit about it.
I mean, I try to live, like I said to you before, I was a chef. I hate waste, especially like food waste, because I've seen so much of it. So I'm far more aware of the waste that goes on in the world in terms of food, both professionally and in the household. Far more aware of that than I am in terms of the pollution or the waste or the destructive natures of any other industry, fashion obviously included. But yeah, I did that. Wasn't obvious to me. Textiles would be sort of seconds to sort of oil and gas, maybe.
Definitely. And I mean, that was my starting point. I mean, that's something that most people kind of start with, the wardrobe. Just scale it down. Then I scaled all my bathroom products down, scaled food down, scaled my finances down, and just
so
generally.
So when you say you kind of scaled it down,
to the necessities. So
starting with your wardrobe.
Yeah. So just chucked everything out I didn't wear for the 6 months. With chucking out, I don't mean landfill. I mean, I gave it to friends. I sold it on
the stuff that you've already bought.
Yeah.
How does that help anything?
I think for me it is because I don't see any value in it, but others do.
Right. Okay.
So giving it to someone who would actually wear it. And who would actually be like, oh, I really like it. And when I looked at my wardrobe, the things I really liked were things I was actually given by friends or bought in a charity shop because I felt that is something special.
Yeah.
And giving it to someone who actually cares about it, or giving it to women's shelters or to charities, I just saw myself, you know, the weight was lifted off me knowing it's going to end up somewhere where it's actually going to be used.
I think everyone's, to a degree, really got a wardrobe that is full of stuff that they don't wear. You know, I'm sort of, most of the time, aware what's come out of the wash and is on top of the ironing pile.
Yeah.
Or if everything's been washed, ironed, cleaned and stuck in a wardrobe, then I'll go to my favourites and yeah, I will wear probably the same 10 or 15% of my wardrobe. And there's a vast amount of stuff that I have just got rid of to charity shops and stuff like that, because it was like, I'm kidding myself that that's ever going to fit me again. Like, I've gone up and down with weight. So, but it wasn't a case of, I'm going to scale it. Like, I'd be lying if I said it probably in a couple of years will be back up to being quite a full wardrobe. So obviously you've got rid of a lot of stuff with no intention of replacing it and going shopping and buying
not at
new
all
up-to-date stuff.
No, because I mean, if anyone's wardrobe, you know, I'm like 23 now, I've been through my fair share of phases of what I like to look like, so I kind of knew what my personal style was and what I'm comfortable with, what works with my work life but also my private life.
Yeah, sure.
So I do a lot of hiking. I'm really active in that sense.
Okay.
So I need functional stuff. South Downs are my favourites. Nice. Or also back home in Austria, like the
Austria's
Alps.
Austria's stunning, yeah.
It is stunning.
I went skiing last year or the year before to Austria.
It was
beautiful.
Lovely,
yeah.
Yeah,
really, really lovely.
But also good in the summer when you go hiking the mountains.
To be honest,
exactly.
Like the place that we that me and some friends and my other half went to, you see all the advertising for, we'll come back in this, and it's definitely somewhere that it'd be like, yeah, this is equally beautiful and as much to do in the summer as well. So yeah, I like a bit of hiking. I did the Three Peaks Challenge a while back and done Wales a couple of times.
Yeah,
so I'm with you on that one. So you didn't throw away your hiking gear.
No,
like the outdoors.
Exactly. But the thing is, like, my hiking gear and my yoga gear is almost identical. And
really?
The same, it's almost identical. I mean, obviously, for yoga, you don't need shoes. It's a minimalist dream because you don't need shoes. So,
okay.
You know, you put on your leggings and that's it.
Yeah.
And the same with cycling, you know, spin classes. And,
yeah. So that's your wardrobe. You scale back other elements. You said food.
Food.
See, that's a big one for me. I'm mad into food.
Yeah.
I'm trying to grow some vegetables, or rather my other half is trying to, there's some vegetables you can regrow, and I think it's more of a hobby and a fun thing to see if we can. Like I say, I've got
leeks.
No. I think she's going to try and do a lot of stuff this weekend, because it's just coming into that plant everything season.
It is, yeah.
But
I've got my seedlings,
got potatoes,
yeah. Oh, that's good.
Which we've started to regrow from old potatoes that started to sprout, so you just sort of peel off the bit that's got the sprout on,
The eye,
let it dry out a little bit and then plant it. So we got them on the go. I've got a compost heap that I threw last year the top of a parsnip, and then this spring we started to have a little landscape and clear out in the garden and put in a proper vegetable patch. And moving the compost heap, I found this parsnip top and it started to regrow. So we planted that to see what's going to happen with that, and carrots as well. So, you know, but it's I couldn't say that's making a massive difference to being more sustainable. I'd have to have a field to make any sort of.
Yeah, I mean, I
to
think
to feel like I'm making any sort of difference. So for me, it's sort of it's a fun hobby, and let's have a go at that and see if we can have one dinner out of a huge, great, big vegetable patch.
That's it. I mean, I'm not going to be self-sufficient with like the permaculture garden I'm just starting, but it's just something that kind of the lost knowledge of growing veggies and then being really excited and. Like, you know, like you said, your parsnip, you just realise what can be done.
Yeah.
You know, it's a fun thing.
I remember actually throwing that bloody thing out.
And once you grow food, you actually value it as well. You're kind of like, you're less likely to just chuck it away just because it's a bit wrinkly.
Absolutely. I think I definitely agree with you value it and you sort of go, as you're washing it, I've grown that and then I'm getting excited now because
so you put the seed in. Yeah.
I'm gonna eat that and I did that. But obviously you went to Lammas. I don't know how big it is. I was aware of it before I come across your website, but only in as much as a couple of minutes of video here there from other people that may have gone. But how does it scale? I mean,
so basically,
can someone live a sustainable life? Someone can.
Well,
is it really
the
possible?
Buzzword here is sustainable. You can live sustainable in the city as well, because sustainable just means,
or self-sufficient. Like, can we grow our stuff ourselves?
Self-sufficient. For example, in Lammas, what happened was I actually stayed in a farmhouse. So there was an old dairy farm there, and they used to own the whole hill, and they just used to rent it out to a sheep farmer. And he then could actually not live off the hill and off his sheep anymore, because just the prices of sustaining that. And he went out of business, and they then put the land out for, you know, auction or something. And then Lammas came along and proposed to create a one planet development on it. So what a one planet development is you are allowed to live on a piece of land where you usually wouldn't be able to build a house on, but you're only allowed to do it if you can prove that within a time frame you live self-sufficiently off it. So that means not just obviously food, but also you also have to have some money, so you have to have some, you know, means of income, like they're doing the courses, or they make their own beauty products, or they sell it locally. And now there's, I believe, 12 or 13 families living off that one hill, which before, not even like traditionally speaking, traditional farming methods, not even one family could live off. So by regenerating the land and doing it by permaculture principles,
What's that then?
So permaculture.
I'll say for people listening that don't know, but also for me.
Yeah. So permaculture is, well, quite briefly, you could say it's like an organic way of farming, but it's also a revolution in the sense that it kind of wants to reconnect people to nature. And just you, instead of looking at the problem and trying to remove the problem, you work with it.
Yeah.
So you think in cycles, and you think you shape your life around wherever you are. So you don't try to change the environment, you work with it.
Okay.
And with,
which means in Wales, working with the rain.
Absolutely. Yeah, and obviously, you know, there's so many things, like, you know, it might be a lot windy patch of land. What can you do there to make it less windy and re-establish wildlife? You plant a hedge, where then you obviously have a shelter for a lot of wildlife to, you know, have get biodiversity going well.
Sure.
So it's just problem solving in a positive way. So it's like the optimist way of dealing with problems. And you know everyone who had a garden knows how annoying it can be to have pests.
Mm-hmm.
And instead of then going in there and just spraying the hell out of it, it's finding a home for them. Maybe having a what they call it is like a sacrificial crop, which then is being eaten by the pests, but therefore they leave your food alone.
Okay.
And it's a huge concept, and it's a huge area that it's quite hard to explain now. But I mean, that's the principle of living in tune with nature and kind of following the principles that are already out there.
Yeah, yeah. So how else are you taking what you've learned there and bringing that in? Because you still live. Because you're not living in an eco-village. Exactly. What's the technical term? I don't want to
I mean, they are called an eco-village, yeah.
Okay, so... Yeah. Smashing.
Well done.
So, but I mean, people living in an eco-village, I guess, from my perception of what I've seen from your film, because I'm looking at individuals or maybe small families, and I'm looking at their little garden, and I'm looking and thinking, you know, great, for the camera, you've just dug up a handful of carrots. But I'm looking at that handful of carrots and thinking, that's maybe one dinner, and that's taken a fucking long time to grow. And I'm looking at the plot of land that you've got, and I'm thinking,
That's why they can't
do
it.
Exactly.
Yeah. I mean, what the thing is, like, that's why they can't do it overnight. That's why they're being given a few years and a few seasons to observe the land. And
they can't also do it on their own, right? It sort of works because there's a community. So you could say, like, one person
it's
can
a
grow
lot
carrots,
easier. Absolutely.
And someone else can say, right, okay, on your little plot of land within our village community, you can maybe raise animals, or you can grow another vegetable.
I mean, with permaculture, it's a whole system, so everyone does kind of everything, but you specialise in obviously certain crops. Some people might really like to grow rare kinds of edible flowers.
Yeah.
Others might focus more, like you said, on like a small dairy. So it's really people, it's a lot easier obviously to do in a community, but there are people out there who do it in small families as well on a patch of land. But I mean, the whole sense of One Planet development and going back to basics is also really making connections with people again and learning to work together in a sense of you don't do it for money, but you do it as like an exchange system.
Yeah, okay. I definitely like that, an exchange or like bartering and going back to that. I think talking to you, I had an idea of some of the things that we might talk about, and on the way over I was thinking, we're probably going to talk about how much or how doing this kind of way of life might impact on the planet. And you haven't really discussed that. It seems to be more personal appreciation, personal development, more than I'm doing it for the planet. Which is good, because I've got to be honest, I don't think it makes a massive difference, does it? If we all adopted the... We can't all live on eco-villages.
Yeah.
We're still always going to have big cities and big towns. And I can't do enough to feed me and my family on the lands that I've got. It's just impossible. So if it wasn't for the personal satisfaction that I would get from growing the odd carrot and saying that one day in a month or 1 weekend in a month I can have a nice feast of things that I've grown myself, but the other 29 days in a month I'm back to living exactly how I normally live, like 99.9% of the population. So if it wasn't for that personal satisfaction, it's sort of, what's the point?
Consumption, that's a big thing, where you don't really feel like you make a difference, you have to buy other veg. Like thinking about, well, you know, 10 years ago we didn't have that many supermarkets, we kind of bought it more locally. Now a lot of people just go into supermarkets, and that is something which, you know, is not necessarily bad. Supermarkets are doing their thing of getting British produce back in now. But because of that development, there is a lot of small scale farms and small scale businesses suffered under that trend. And I mean, that's something you can easily do in a city as well, to get like a local veg box. Like, I get my veg from a local veg box.
Okay.
And if I am not able to do
that. Is that local vegetables that have been grown in and around London?
Yeah.
Or is that
local.
Just a local supplier?
It's like community grow schemes.
Okay.
So, for example, you've got the biggest one, Sutton Community Farm.
And they put together a veg box for you.
Exactly. Okay. And, for example, I did my introduction to permaculture course there as well. So I actually got to see where they grow it, how they grow it. You can visit the farm, you can volunteer. And it's a lot of it works on a voluntary basis. And because of that, it's not just the food, but it also offers a place for people to go, to have a chat to people that might not, you know, but might be more on the edge of society or just feel like they want to give back, and they want to, you know, they don't have their own garden or they want to learn more about it. And they also do a lot of projects with schools, and there is just so much where you think, oh, it's just a veg box, but it really isn't. It's a whole community thing being re-established.
Don't get me wrong, I think it makes a massive difference. And as an ex-restaurant, I always used to buy as much as I could locally from things, you know, even things like honey. You know, I was like, if I can use less sugar and I can use honey, but then I can buy honey that's produced locally, then that's a great thing. And then I actually used to have in the restaurant, you know, sell the honey in jars as well, so that I can say, well, you know, I can use the honey and I can buy it, but I can also then maybe sell it for you as well, because the footfall of my restaurant is far more than your house where you've got a few hives and stuff. And that was nice, and that was nice to support a local business. I don't think that made a shit of difference to the honey that companies sell in Tesco's, you know, that's honey produced from abroad.
But it made a difference to the person whose hobby it was.
Exactly. But that's sort of, like I said, I come with a sort of an idea of how I thought this would be. I really thought you was going to be, the planet needs this, that. And I was sort of armed with bullshit. my bag for life and me buying a jar of local honey that probably lasts me a month, because I don't consume honey, you know, 5 days, 7 days a week or anything like that. So a jar of honey that I might have bought for 4 or 5 quid is going to last me quite a long time. Make that guy feel better, but essentially that, a few homegrown vegetables or locally sourced vegetables, me in my home, and a bag for life, it's not making a massive difference, is it, really, on a planetary scale?
No, not at all. And the thing is, like, that's the thing, like, when I first got into, like, oh my god, you know, what can I do to make any difference, you always think about, like, the big solutions.
But the thing is, that's what we were talking about. I'm sort of, like, I'm pleasantly surprised.
Yeah.
Because you're realistic. You're realistic, and I think, you know, you've got into it for the right reasons of, you know, I'm doing it for me because it makes me feel good. And if it can make a few other people feel good, that's great. And other people can see that example and get in, I think that's really lovely. Rather than you saying, oh no, if everybody did it, we'll heal our planet, because I think that's a load of rubbish.
Obviously it's unrealistic.
I really do. Yeah. I mean, I'm angry about it, I'm sad about it. I'm not like pro deforestation and you know, don't bother using bags for life because they don't make a difference.
That's the issue.
Seriously, I'm getting a bit fed up with people.
It's the issue with activism.
Yeah.
That it's... I do know my fair share of activists, and the issue is that you have in groups, you kind of want to achieve something and you want to, you know, protest against something and make a difference. But a lot of the times that's so intimidating, and you might, you know, you might win one battle, but you'd never win the war in that sort of thing. And then you get like a heavy sense of depression, because then it comes back to you saying like, well, you know, I can't do anything anyway, so why bother?
Yeah.
So it's then, like, what I'm trying to do is just to really focus on the small things in life, and, like, the ones that kind of make... Yeah, every person has got their own story and their own things that they can do, so not everyone will be able to afford 4 veg boxes a month.
Sure.
But just... I think it starts with the personal thinking, really.
And that's really, like I say, it's refreshing to kind of come into this thinking this conversation is going to be one thing, and actually it's a different one. And it is a bit more of a personal, yeah, I'll do this for me, and I think that's nice, because, you know, I probably come off a little bit bad already, but I do my recycling.
Yeah.
Largely because I have to. But then, you know, the missus is really genuinely, you know, no, we should do that. And then... yeah, remember those bags for life and the canvas bags when we go out to supermarkets or wherever, because it is better than the plastic. And part of me thinks, I really love her for that. I really think that's great, because she takes it seriously and she does it. And I think at the same time, I'm sort of, it doesn't make as much difference, because do you know how much of a shit carbon footprint it is every time you see a plane flying over your head? And then, if you know how many planes are in the sky at any one time over just like America, you know, it's phenomenal. You just think, my bag for life and growing a carrot or two or a parsnip in my own little compost ain't making a massive difference. So if everybody did it, it still wouldn't make a massive, massive difference. So for me, going back to sort of, you've sort of thrown your wardrobe away for nothing, if that was your motivation. But I am surprised that sort of wasn't.
No, not at all.
You know, because I've met a few activists that try and tell me that, no, that is the way forward, and, you know, we should all drive electric cars and stuff. And I just think it's not realistic, because you're never going to get an electric lorry, and, you know, the amount of lorries that drive around and they're burning up diesel, it's sort of, my car and my old little journey around the, you know, the small Essex town that I live in, it's going to make no difference whatsoever, no difference at all. So
it's really about personal happiness, isn't it? I mean, the whole mindfulness movement and the whole minimalism movement, the heart of it is to find, you know, your personal happiness.
Yeah.
And because it is, because people are depressed of where they are, because a lot of time you just sleepwalk into a situation you're in.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then you have no idea how to get out of it, and it seems unrealistic. And that's the same idea behind sustainability. You know, people might be just overwhelmed with it and then just not bother.
Sure.
And that's the whole thing of getting yourself out of a situation. And a lot of people I met did suffer previously from mental illnesses, and they had a lot of issues. And I mean, so did I. I had depression for years and years until I realised that, you know, only I can change my situation. And that's something I then also applied, you know, to everything I do now. And, you know, I still have days where I'm like, oh, you know, that didn't make a difference at all. No one listened to that. Or you listen to the news and you're like, well, you know, what does my passion about living sustainably gonna do at all in this lifetime? But the end,
it does definitely feel that that's sort of, if it can make a little difference, brilliant. But that does seem to me, after talking to you, that that's not the primary goal, really. It's an inner satisfaction. So, which is lovely, I think. It's really lovely. And something I can relate to, I do deer stalking. And the meat that I will get from harvesting a deer, I don't do it enough that I'm going to replace all of the farmed animals that I consume. But I get an inner, well, that's one less, you know, amount of meat that I have to get from a farm. Even if it's like the best, most ethical farm that you can get, it's still a farm. and not to bash farmers, because I think on a large part, especially in this country, on a large part, most of them are doing a fantastic job and a difficult job. But, you know, I saw from mingling with people that I know in the chef world that then actually do the hunts and the deer stalking and stuff like that, that, well, there's an issue of breeding numbers and stuff, and that population of deer needs to be controlled. That's just like a fact, you know. They need to be controlled, and the best and most humane way is dispatch with rifle, deer stalkers going out. And it just fascinated me, so I went out and I got qualified, so I had to go and sit sort of like a qualification on it. And yeah, there is like this internal pride and satisfaction I get when I'm then preparing, and I use like everything. So, and mostly because I've already got the skill to do that from my chef days, but yeah, still I get that real internal sense of satisfaction.
And you're connected to the food again. Yeah, that's totally the issue. What a lot of people have is that you go in a supermarket and you buy a piece of cheap meat and you eat it, and that's that. You don't actually value that was a living being, and it might
things go off in the fridge. Like the amount of times, and I'm guilty of it, you know, I'll buy, you know, a little plastic tray with my purple sprout and broccoli and my mom's too and stuff like that, and I'll let it go past its sell-by date. Not even to the point where I can get away with that, like to the point where that's dead, that's gone.
Yeah.
And I feel bad throwing it away, but at the same time, not as bad as if I'd have grown it, like, because I haven't got that personal connection to it.
Yeah.
So I definitely, you know, after all I've said that it's not making a massive change, it's like I do definitely get that internal sense of, you get an achievement when you've grown something yourself, and you get that internal, you know, yeah, it's like you say, when you had depression and going out in a garden can be quite kind of
it's really therapeutic
and cathartic, and I get that, But at the same time, it's nice that you're someone that does that, that doesn't take it to an activist level, that says, no, it's going to change the world. Because I don't think if we all went out deer stalking and got our food, that's then not sustainable to take away farms entirely. Yeah.
And like you said, there's not one solution, and everyone kind of has to find their way.
We just don't live in a world where there's one solution for almost any of the world's problems and challenges now, and that's sad.
And the thing is,
I hate when someone tries to tell me contrary. Yeah. So I was gearing up for a little bit of a debate with you, and so you sort of fucked that one for me.
took the wind out of your sails. No,
it's someone that I can agree with because she's doing a little bit, fully understanding that this is for me, not necessarily. You know, and if it helps the world a little bit, tiny little bit. Brilliant, thumbs up, but I'm doing it for me, and that's sort of lovely, because then other people listening that are probably along the same train of thought that I am, it might then make them go, well, I can grow something. So what would you start off with? If people maybe don't want to throw out their entire wardrobe and they want to get stuck in with you know, living a bit more of a self-sufficient, sustainable...
I think choosing where you buy stuff from is a huge thing, because obviously you still have to consume. Like, I'm still consuming food. I still ran out of toothpaste and I have to buy toothpaste.
Yeah.
But it's then making the conscious decisions. Oh, I might not buy it in Tesco. I might make the effort and go to the small organic shop around the corner. Might spend a couple quid more, but it might last me longer. And that's when you think about consuming, but really where people should start is, you know, solving their own problems first.
Like what?
Like life problems. You know, when you're stuck somewhere, you know, in a situation and you feel really unhappy and it makes you miserable, then it's easier to see, like, everything is wrong with the world, you know. Like, I can't make a difference. I can't even sort my own life out. I think that is the starting point in, like, really listening to yourself and, like, why do I feel so depressed? Okay, I might not have that much time to do what I like.
Sounds like there's a bit of a story here.
Yeah.
In terms of, you sound very much like you're speaking, like, very personal experience. Mm. You're 23?
Yeah.
What went wrong? What was bad? what put you on the journey then to say... And not only what put you on that journey, but then how was it that this sustainable, what you would say, a better way of life, and I agree with that, but, you know, who am I to say it is better if it's not for everyone? But what brought you to that as the solution to a problem, and what was the problem?
I mean, I suppose with a lot of problems, they start in teenage years, don't they? So with me, it was kind of like... I felt like I didn't belong, in the sense that I was in a school which was very academic. I'm very creative. Back in Austria, you know, I was really creative. I didn't really fit into the box. I didn't really fit into, you know, I didn't understand things. I always questioned things, and that was my issue there, is I asked too many questions. I wanted to know why. And there was never, obviously, an answer. For a lot of things, there was not an answer why. Are we doing it? And that just really frustrated me, and I lost interest in certain things. And then I was just like, you know, I was doing a lot of mixed media arts. I was doing a lot of painting, illustration. And then I visited England quite a few times, and there really the world opened for me. And I was like, oh my God, people actually do art as a living. People actually live really freely and have a lot of inspiration. And for me, it was then just like, then the hole opened, because I was like, I'm stuck here, you know, I can't do anything, you know, and you just feel like, oh, you know, I'm just from a small village in Austria.
I was going to say, all right, before we tell your entire life story, a small village in Austria.
Yeah.
How small? What's it compared to something that you've visited maybe in the UK? Like, I'm from near Southend. Southend, Basildon are probably the two main towns. I'm from a town that's almost exactly halfway between the two.
Yeah. Then, how many people live there?
I haven't got a clue.
Look, I'm not sure how many live in my village now, because it's got a bit bigger, but it's very small. There's barely any public transport. You need a car to get around. And then I went to school in a city which is about the size of Brighton.
Right.
So that was a lot nicer.
Yeah.
But yeah, so it was
that. Not as artsy and culturally advanced.
Not back
as
then.
Brighton.
No.
So you being that type of person, there was no
exactly
outlet for that creativity. And
I didn't see it. Like now that I've, you know, moved away and then visit the city again, I all of a sudden see all those amazing creative projects. But where I was back then, I couldn't really see past it because I just felt like I spend all my time doing, you know, my A-levels and just trying to tick all the boxes to make sure it's all right. And then you've got the internet on the other side showing you all the amazing things that could be done. But I just felt really lost because I was just stuck there.
How do you get from here to here?
Exactly. Yeah. And I was like, but there's actually nothing wrong in my life. It's not like I'm being abused. It's not that I'm
no
really poor.
Me.
Like, there's nothing like, oh God, I've got such a middle class life. Or why am I so worried? Why am I so unhappy? You know, like, I know other people who are like far worse off than me.
But I think depression and any mental health issue really can come in so many different guises. And if you're feeling crap, you're feeling crap. And if you've got an underprivileged or a privileged or just a middle of the
just
road
normal
life,
yeah,
you know, we can all be affected by a problem. I for the most part of my life have been fairly privileged. There wasn't always a time when I was, but you know, fortunately for most of my life it's not been too bad. But yeah, I've been through my fair share of feel really shit and probably don't know why.
And then for me it was then the sense of like finding an outlet and kind of like filling a hole.
Sure.
You know, trying different things, you know, doing a lot of partying, you know, having quite an adventurous lifestyle in that sense, and you know, being out there having good time, you know. And then also obviously trying to find another person to fill that hole and sort of like, you know, that's just a spiral down effect of all the different factors.
Sure.
That just generally come.
Most people will experience growing up, I suppose.
Exactly. Just a standard thing, isn't it?
By the fact that you were probably born in the wrong town. You felt that there was something a little bit more. You wanted to be creative. So you came over to the UK.
Yeah, and that was around my 18th birthday, and I kind of saw that as a chance to leave the old me behind.
Yeah.
You know, like the, you know, partying at every opportunity I could, I would go and party. But then when I moved here, I kind of calmed down, and then I got really into upcycling, and then I got really into, you know, like the vegan movement and clean eating and that sort of thing, and that kind of just led.
Vegan?
Yeah, I'm a vegan. Yeah.
So you go around saying I killed deer. Didn't sit well with you then.
Oh, it's, you know, it's a personal life choice. I'm not here to judge anyone.
I love you. I love you. You're someone that's going to talk to me about sustainability issues, but okay, we can fix it just by saying, well, we can do a bit of habit. Yeah. And you're a vegan that's not going to condemn me for living the way I live. Brilliant.
Yeah. And that's kind of when I started to realise the only way I'm going to get out of that hole is doing it myself, because
sure,
I had friends with depression, and you know, it's hard looking at them when I have a good day and they have a bad day, and you know, you look at them and you're like, that is me. I'm just giving them all the advice, but they're not going to listen, because I know I wouldn't listen to myself if I'd be in that situation. So that is just, that was the biggest eye-opening thing for me. It was just like, well, you know, I can do it myself. I think it's like self-empowerment. That's a huge thing for me. It's like, I know that I can do it myself and not relying on anyone to fix something for me.
Yeah.
That's the idea I had for the, you know, from being 13 till 18, I thought I needed someone to fix my life and I needed someone to be the other part of my life and, you know, make myself feel good again. And then realizing you know what, I can do it. I just moved to a different country on my own.
Do you organized think you needed it all. To move to a different country?
I needed to.
Okay.
I think it was...
But why a different country? Why not just a bigger town or a more creative town in Austria? If that exists, I've only been to Austria a couple of times.
I mean, I've looked around for different unis, I looked around different cities, and it didn't feel right to me. I think I needed I needed a different culture.
Okay.
That was a big deal for me, to be somewhere where there's a lot of different influences. And I mean, London is a place where just people go, and you know, a lot of people are not originally from London. They're from all walks of life. And obviously my first destination was Brighton, and you know, meeting people there, and it was really eye-opening to me, just the opportunities.
Sure.
Whereas now when I go back, like you said, I probably could have done it in Austria, but I didn't see it. Needed the move to realize, okay, I'm not idolizing the UK. I know how the real UK is now, because that's a lot of like what my family will say now is like, oh, you always say the UK was perfect, London was perfect, you needed to move there because everyone is so much nicer. Which is obviously
nicer in London.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, in a sense of that, I idolized it, but obviously before I moved, because I thought that was the way to go. Whereas now, I obviously know, you know, that's not the case. People are really grumpy in London. But just seeing the fact that, you know, I did it, and it was, in a sense, I knew there's bad days here as well. But that there are people who actually have done similar things to what I've done. That was a big thing of seeing, like, okay, people do it. People move their whole life to a different country. And
I love London for that. That it's a real melting pot of people and cultures. I think it's almost like not many other cities like that, or you know, even towns, you know. I like that about London. I think that's great, and I can definitely see how that would be like a wake up culture shock.
Yeah, absolutely.
But a positive shock.
Yeah.
You know, people just talk about it was a real culture shock, and immediately you think in the negative, like, oh my God. But for you, it was almost like, oh my God, like, this is a real positive wake up.
It was like, oh, life is worth living. Life is amazing, you know. You have so many things to do.
Yeah.
And I think also here, people talk a bit more openly about mental health. And that was something that helped me a lot.
I think starting to, which is brilliant.
Mm.
But yeah, not... Like, I'm a bit older than you. I'm 32. But when I was your age, it wasn't mega open. I wouldn't say that that's a British people or Londoners, they're more open. I think it's a new thing that people over the, you know,
might be
the
a generational
sort of
thing,
we're just starting to talk about it a bit more, which is great, you know, because it's definitely something that, you know, needs addressing. And I hear adverts on the radio, you know, advertising that it's okay to talk about mental health. You know, there's more people, celebrities or people on TV talking about it, whether it's an advert or a TV program. That just didn't really happen when I was your age. So, you know, it's great that that's the case. And I find it's easier to talk about it. Like, when I started doing this, you know, I've met some people that, you know, they start telling me the problems that they've had or are even currently having, you know, and I was like, oh God, that's going to be really difficult if things like that come up. And then when they do, it's like, oh,
that's fine, isn't it?
You know, are you better now? You know, or I can relate to some of it, you know. You know, I kind of grew up and weirdly my mum worked in a mental hospital. So I always knew what mental illness was because I kind of grew up being aware of that. I lived in the staff houses of this mental hospital, so I could see exactly where she worked. It was there, and we, you know, it was all the be careful when you go out because if they escape, which, although it was sort of children's legends and stuff like that, mental hospital patients escaping yeah. and terrorising the neighbourhood. And for the large part, probably wasn't true. It still brought an awareness of what mental health was.
Mm.
But it still wasn't talked about. And to the point where I grew up really believing depression doesn't exist. It's a state of mind. I really grew up thinking, yeah, I was a real... You know, you can think your way out of things. And then it wasn't until, like I said, last year, for a good part of last year and half of the year before, I was really genuinely just depressed, which is really weird saying it, because I sort of, until I realised I almost didn't believe it existed. I almost thought, you know, it's just a state of mind. You know, if you start to think a bit more positive, you just will. And exactly. it got to the point where I was like, no, I'm just generally fucking miserable. And then this came about because it was just literally like you waking up and coming to another country, experiencing another culture, and then getting into permaculture and all the other things that you've done, yeah. upcycling.
And the thing is, like, it's there is never an end to depression, because like it always creeps up when you kind of stop. And that's what I've kind of noticed, is like, if I don't do what I honestly really want to do,
yeah.
it's there again, you know. And it might happen, you know, when I least expect it. And then I realise that, like, why am I feeling that way? Because I'm not doing...
Yeah.
I'm not honest to myself. And yeah. that's a big thing. It's like, you know, if you're not honest to yourself and you're like, you just think you're doing the right thing with your life, because
yeah.
for me, I can only speak obviously for me personally, it's usually when I do things that are expected of me. So when I do something thinking, oh, you know, I probably should do it because... It looks great. I mean, it's gonna, you know, people will think great things about me if I do it.
What kind of things are you talking about?
I think it's just like generally conforming in a sense of hobbies, of, you know, doing normal things in your free time, not doing a permaculture certificate and a permaculture degree, or, you know, when I'm from a background that's fashion, so people do automatically assume all I do is fashion related. So, and I tried doing it for a while, but I realized no, it's not my niche.
Yeah,
my niche.
But do you still love the fashion industry?
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, like, what I love about it is the self-expression again. What I don't like about it is yeah. the vast consumerism about it, and it yeah. getting so fast. But I know
it's
myself
hard to have a love hate kind of affiliation to yeah. anything, but when it's your job or the industry that you're
mm.
you, for me, I was so passionate about food, cooking and being a chef, and that's sort of, for the large part growing up, it's almost one of the only things that I wanted to do. There was a couple of other things that I was like, yeah, I'd like to do that, but I'm not old enough, or there's a whole host of experiences that I've got to have, or university, and so it was sort of like, I'll go in and I'll do the college and I'll go in and get a job and
mm.
wash pots and work my way up in kitchens, and I loved it. And then sort of that's probably why I've become a little bit depressed, was because I'm not in that industry anymore. But it's not the food or the cooking that I miss. It's actually the people. It's actually like standing shoulder to shoulder with a group of people. And in restaurants, staff turnover is huge.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's always a new waitress. There's always a new barman. There's always a dozen new chefs walking in and out of the kitchens. And it was, from all walks of life, especially when you work in London, you know, you're shoulder to shoulder with people from Peru to Japan. And everywhere in between. And that's doing that for 16 hours a day, well, you're just talking. You're talking stories from different people growing up, from, you know, stories of generation, because I would work with people younger than me and older than me. And that's the bit that I think I missed. And I went from working like that to working quite a lot on my own at home. And that was why I started to get really bummed out. And I didn't know it until I started listening to podcasts, yeah. until I started hearing stories of other people. But they were mainly celebrities, and they were people that I can't identify with. These aren't the people that I stood shoulder to shoulder with, talking cod shit and everything with as a chef. And it was a wake up, like you kind of moving here, was me going, I'm going to start this. And I have to say, like, the last few months has been like the happiest I've ever been, just because I'm back talking to strangers about anything and everything. I think it's great. So, yeah, that was me identifying with and saying, you know, I totally get
That's it. I mean, it's the same with me when I meet people, you know, through social media who are interested in similar things, but not necessarily the same. When I sit down and have a conversation with them face to face,
yeah,
I get so invigorated by it because I kind of learn so much. And I think that is something I want to focus now more on, just the personal connections and really talking, because that is something. When you're a bit of an introvert like me, it's quite hard at the beginning. And, you know, you kind of talk in society what you can talk about, and, you know, your chit-chat, and it only gets you so far. And that's something I learned on my travels when there was no TV and there was no distractions. So you just sat down and you actually had to talk. That is a skill that I realised I didn't have.
I've put it out there in sort of some of the promo for this, is that for the large part, I find that it's a skill that a lot of the younger generation, I'm sorry to be maybe really, what's the word?
Ageist.
Just condescending in general, really, to throw you automatically in the younger generation. But, you know, I sort of think anyone less younger than my brother is
How old is your brother?
25.
Okay.
So he's enough younger than me that I can see you've had a different life.
Mm.
You never grew up with no internet. You never grew up with the same sort of challenges. And we came from the same parents, same upbringing, but you've clearly had a different set of challenges to me and my younger sister, who's 18 months younger than me, or 15 months younger than me. So that's where I say that's the generation. That's only a few years. Generations used to be a family generation, you know, grandparents, parents, children, each of those, and now it can be as little as 7 to 10 years, you know.
Yeah.
And I think that's great that we've moved to a point where, you know, things can change that rapid.
Mm.
But now I talk to people your age and I just think, whoa, you know, you're way more advanced academically for the most part than I was at your age when I was, and not just you, but I spoke with another 24 year old, she's just turned 24, and she did a podcast like a week before her 24th birthday, so she's pretty much exactly the same age as you, and I was blown away at how much that generation knows, but almost quite a lot don't articulate it, because we have these throwaway social media conversations. We don't have a sit down. When was the last time you spoke to a stranger for an hour?
That's it, isn't it?
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I was like, that's now bleeding into that life that your generation and people even younger than you, and now that's the life that they're born into. That wasn't what I was born into, but it's now bleeding into, like, social media's meaning that lifestyle is bleeding into, you know, and soon I am going to start losing that ability to have a conversation. Those conversations that I used to love having with the people that I used to work with, you know, will it then bleed into, like, my mum and her generation, that we start to, the more we have digital, the digital age, yeah, we're going to just completely lose that ability to properly have a conversation and enjoy people. So
absolutely.
It's interesting that you sort of brought that up, really.
Yeah, I mean, it's something that I'm really interested in, because like I said, when I travelled around and had those conversations, I didn't really know what to talk about.
Yeah.
I just sat there and I was like, I am not sure what we can talk about. You know, like, you just sit down on a table with four strangers.
It's scary.
It's terrifying. And, you know, like, oh, I'm going to be living here for a month.
I don't prepare this with notes. Like, I brought my laptop up. You can see, I just put your name just in case you say anything that I need to, because I've got a habit of saying, oh, we'll talk about that later, and then never do. So if I say that, I try and write it down now. But
it's terrifying.
You know, so I'm like, sort of, I'm getting off a Channel Cross. I don't know who this person is. I have no idea your age. No idea. You could have been the same age as me. You could have been 5 years older. You know.
Mm.
So it's sort of, I don't know who I'm talking to. Exactly what about? Like I said, I thought you was going to come right at me with you've got to live more sustainably, and you haven't at all. So it's been a surprise, but that surprise equally as much could be, I say it's an hour conversation, and you could just give me 5 minutes and just be yes, no answers.
Yeah.
So scary, but yeah, you were travelling around and finding sitting at a table with a few people difficult to start those conversations.
Like the first 2 days, definitely. And then actually going back, it was a huge shock to not having those conversations, to sitting on, you know, on a table, everyone's on their phone, you know, whilst you're eating. And
where's that? What, back?
Back home. Oh, so right, like, you okay. know, when you're just in a normal life, you know, or you're at work and, you know, everyone is kind of multitasking all the time. And then you start to notice these things, but I'm like, oh, really? This is really strange behaviour.
Yeah.
But you don't notice it anymore. Yeah. And I've fallen back into it as well. You know, you eat whilst you watch TV, and it's just a lot of noise driven in. And that's something, obviously, like you said, oh, what do you want to do next? Or how do you want to live a sustainable life in the city? That is something that's kind of like the next steps for me, because they seem quite difficult to me. Being an introvert is going out there, talking to people, and going out there and like really having a community sense of feel, you know. And that's something that is kind of on my agenda now.
Yeah.
Just to be a bit more conscious, to have conversations whilst I'm eating, to do a little bit of networking here and there, but not business related, but really just passion project related.
Yeah, I definitely think that we there's so many networking sites for professionals or that could be used. And actually, yeah, sometimes it's quite, I almost feel it's quite brave to sort of stick on there, just want to meet people.
Just want to have a chat. I'm not selling anything.
Like, yeah, not selling anything. I don't need you to give me a job or further advance my career. I'm interested in people that might share the same ideas as me or introduce me to new ones. I think that's quite a brave thing. And actually that's sort of the context for people listening. Why I'm bringing it up is that's sort of how we met.
Exactly.
It was on a networking site, that sort of the love child of Tinder and LinkedIn. And I think it's amazing. I think it's a brilliant app. I was really surprised when, I can't even remember how I came across it. It might have been a Facebook advert or something.
An Instagram advert, actually, how I found it.
And I was like, okay, I'll give that a go. And then it was sort of like, oh yeah, this is like Tinder meets LinkedIn. And yeah, most people have put in there, you know, I do this and I'm looking to meet these people. And it was very career driven.
Yeah.
And I just put in there, I'm doing a podcast if you want to be on it. That's it. And there wasn't a lot of description, really. There was nothing about me personally. So it was, people would contact me if they were generally interested on having a chat with me. And I was kind of swiping, I don't want to meet the person that just wants to talk about their career. And your kind of website and everything flagged up. And I thought, yeah, meet that person. And we met, and it's sort of, you put yourself out there. I'm putting myself out there. Essentially, we're two people saying, I haven't got enough real friends in my life. I'd quite like to meet some people. And I just think that's quite a brave thing, and because it's different. It's not, but it is out there.
And I think the funny thing is,
or do like, a course, like you say, go and anything. I did my deer stalking course, you've done permaculture courses. Go and do anything and go and meet people.
That's it. And you kind of, you've been put in a situation, you have to introduce yourself and talk about yourself, and it kind of makes you think who you are as well, because when you're with your friends group, you don't necessarily talk about yourself or what's really going on.
Yeah.
Whereas especially if
you've got like this kind of depression.
Yeah.
You know, the thing that might say, yeah, I'm depressed, I don't want to meet people and talk about it, but it really is probably the best thing. So yeah, it's difficult. I'll put on some links to. I put this out on. Acast, which is like, you can get the podcast on iTunes and stuff like that. And you said you know podcasts quite well. Have you heard of Acast?
No, I haven't actually.
So you get like anytime you say something, a link will appear with a link that says, you know, the veg boxes, and I'll put that in there. So, and then we talk about depression, I always put in some mental health links and stuff like that, so people can go, you know, actually, I will do a course, go and have a look.
That's brilliant. Yeah.
Yeah. No, it's as if this can reach out and someone takes something away from it, then great. But it's nice to meet someone that's genuine. I mean, you look really happy. You look like a really happy person when you kind of said, yeah, you know. So it was a depression. It was a general. I really didn't feel great. I mean, how severe would you say was, you know, I've met some people that have done some crazy things like near suicide or suicidal depression, which is really sad, but it happens. I mean, what sort of actual state of mind was you?
It was self-destructive behaviour, really. I mean, that was the main thing. It was just...
You said partying quite a couple of times.
Drinking a lot, you know, you smoke, you drink. Sorry, Mum, you know, sorry.
Yeah, just
thank you. I'm not going to
tell her. My mum's going to be shocked at some of the things she'll hear on some of these podcasts.
Yeah, I think it was just going out there and being, you know, finding comfort in the wrong things.
Yeah.
Finding comfort in being drunk and meeting people and thinking they're friends.
Yeah.
You know, hanging out with them a lot. And then just, you know, you get in the wrong crowds, don't you? And it's just, then it gets to a point where you don't really know what you want to do anymore. You just do it for the sake of it, you know? And it's a huge thing is like, you know, people don't think that alcohol is an addiction or that going out is an addiction, but it really is. And it's because you're bored. And I was so bored and I was so fed up. And it was just getting to a point where I was like, I don't even care anymore. You know, and it got to a low point where I once drank too much and ended up in hospital.
Wow.
And that was after my 18th birthday, and that was before I moved.
Yeah.
And that was when I knew I needed to say goodbye to you know, some influences I had.
You kind of got a smile on your face that sort of says, yeah, wow, that was sort of, you recognise that was stupid, but a sort of real situation at the same time, you know. It's, you know,
I mean, the
a
thing
reflective
is,
reflective smile,
it's
a
like,
happy
no,
that was me, but it was very much a clearly, well, I'm glad that's not now.
And I'm glad, to be fair, I'm glad I went through it
right
at the age I did, because now I can focus on what I really want to do, and that's the main motivation of my life right now.
So, what is that? I mean, is it, because I've said, you're in marketing, you've got a website which clearly kind of shows off the fact that you know how to do marketing and a bit of advertising and you know how to show yourself off. But I mean, you've made a pretty decent film, you know, it's 20 minutes long, but it's sort of, do you just want to carry on learning about sustainability, or do you want to kind of get into documentary filmmaking and bits and pieces and explore that as much as anything else?
My thing is, like, I don't just want to learn for myself. I want to learn to share with people. Sure. And that's why I kind of chose the medium of documentary filmmaking, because that's how I got inspired as well. You know, you watch YouTube videos, and that's really inspired me to see different ways of life.
Yeah.
And I do my fair bit of writing as well, but I always felt that visually it's just so much easier to tell a story, to do it through documentary filmmaking. And obviously the thing I've done, the 20 minute film, it was quite an amateur thing I did, for the fact that I had to fit it into quite a really tight time frame to do everything, to do, you know, the interviews, to meet people, because you don't just sit down there and like on a table and say, oh, why do you do this, you know?
Yeah.
So you have to get to know them to some respect as well. And I did it on a work exchange scheme.
Yeah, not
scheme.
Like a cowboy thing like I'm doing.
I mean, I had a really limited budget. So how I financed the whole thing was I worked for it. So I gave my time working on the field.
How long was you there?
Well, one project I was there, you know, I think it was like 4 weeks or so.
Wow.
So you work on the field and you really get to know the work that goes into it, so you don't just make a film about it.
Yeah, you've condensed like, 4 weeks into 20 minutes rather than I went there for a day and asked some questions.
Exactly.
And kind of got,
I mean, for example,
living.
At Lammas, I was only able to be there about 5 days or so, just because I didn't
still
have
a good
enough
time.
Yeah, exactly. But and that's just the thing, is like, what I want to do now is continue doing it, continue getting to know people, learning about why they chose this lifestyle, because I can see a lot of my personal happiness attached to being more sustainable,
yeah,
and living a bit more peaceful in that sense, you know. I mean, it's a whole thing of like, when you look at a lot of vegans, a lot of them used to be, you know, drug addicts or used to be alcoholics, because they find now the cleaner lifestyle is what kind of saved them.
Yeah. I'll say a friend of a friend, she had a really crazy lifestyle, and she's just really gone the complete opposite way, you know. If she was kind of black, she's now white. There was no grey in the middle. She's gone from living a really extreme, crazy, fucked up life to thinking about what she puts in her body, on her body, in terms of clothing and skin creams and stuff like that, but also just about the way you think about things. And that like you just mentioned, it seems to be a trend that...
That's pretty much what I've done. It was, yeah, from one day to another, just kind of like flipped the switch, really. There was, yeah, no real long transition period. It was really just one day to another, where it's like, I can't go on like that. I'm just destroying myself and destroying my future, and, you know, life is worth living in a sense, but I can only do it if I really change my life around.
It's a big, brave, bold moves.
Exactly.
Nah, credit to you. And thank you really, you know, a lot. You know, I don't know how easy or difficult it was. I don't know how senior you are at your position, but, you know, we got a little meeting room in your work, which, you know, thanks very, very much. Send us some photos of your garden, or take them off the blog and I'll put them up, and we'll write a little bit to accompany the podcast on my website and give people the links and stuff like that to find your work and that. And hopefully, if anyone's interested in living a bit more sustainably, whether or not they think that might be the route to being a bit happier, or they just want to have a go and see,
or just want to have a chat with me, that's fine.
If they're interested in growing something, or maybe even if they just say, no, I haven't got a shit about that, but I quite liked your filming, give me some pointers to make a documentary on jigsaw puzzles or whatever yeah, their interest is, you know, then they can tap you up and have a look at what you do. So, you know, thank you very, very much. I've really enjoyed it.
Thank you for coming in.
Yeah. Anything else you want to say before I hit the stop button?
I'm not really sure. God, you're putting me on the spot now. But I think it's just find your own niche, follow your own thing. That's it.
Me again, hello. What did everyone think of that? I enjoyed recording them. I always enjoy recording with people. That one was really tough going in, really, because it was a really kind of hot, muggy afternoon, and I arrived at our office after getting on the tube with all my podcasting gear, arriving in the centre of London in Holborn area, and sitting down quite hot, flustered, and very much aware that I'm a noob at this whole podcasting thing. And I've got to sit down and talk to a stranger who I know nothing about, other than she made this film about sustainable living. Didn't really know if that was just out of interest or if she actually lives that kind of life herself. So she was really, really interesting. Totally cool, really welcoming, and answered a good number of questions and sort of taught me stuff. So I hope, you know, you got something out of that as well. Let me know what you think. You've got all my social media stuff. It's all on the website, thatmrchristopher.com. So go on there, have a look, and let me know what you think. Please, you know, I've read out some reviews at the start. They make me really happy. I'm going to read out a couple more. Because, yeah, I've had some, like I say, if you rate and review and tell me, you know, what you think of the show, when they pop up on iTunes, or if you sort of send me on Facebook or tweet me, yeah, I really like this episode with so-and-so, then I send that on to the people that were, you know, nice enough to be my guest and to be a part of the show, and then that makes them feel really good. So, you know, people have said... you know, I love listening to this podcast. I've been a fan of Ella for a while now, and it was really great to learn about her and her background. So yeah, it was one of her fans found the podcast, and yeah, it was nice for them to get a little bit more of an insight into her life. So I passed that on to her, and yeah, brightens her day. So yeah, don't forget to rate and review, subscribe, but like I say every time, share it, please. It's really important. I don't do it for anything other than the love of the show, and the people that I sit and I have a chat with, they don't do it for anything other than I've asked them, and they're just really kind and good enough to do it, and share their stories. So yeah, share it about if you would. Copy the links off of my social pages. Share it with your friends and your following. And, you know, hopefully it can go around the world. We can all share in the glory of the everyday and ordinary person. It has gone around the world. I've got listeners in New Zealand, Australia, some Middle Eastern countries that I can't pronounce, Russia, all over America. It's mental, because it's only episode 8. We just done episode 8, and it's gone around the world already, which really surprised me, because I thought it would pretty much not leave Essex and my immediate friends and family. So thank you so much to anyone that's listened to it, because you're a part of the show. It wouldn't exist without listeners. It's sort of it needs to be heard, like a falling tree in the woods, so to speak. Who have I got on next week? It's the start next week of the Edinburgh Fringe Festival, which is cool. I'm really hoping to get up there. But I recorded a great episode, actually, with someone who I've been a fan of. We have ordinary and everyday people on this show. But I was lucky enough to sort of meet up with someone who I really like his work, and he's got a show. In fact, he's got two shows going on at the Edinburgh Festival. He's just done Latitude Festival. He's an amazing performer and poet. And you know, like it's been mentioned before, I'm a fan of poetry. But I mean, this guy's saying Kelsey was pretty much one of the first people I ever saw perform poetry, spoken word. But he's got a new show, or a couple of new shows, that are amazing, and they're one man shows, and he's doing it up in Edinburgh. So if you're going, listen to next week's podcast, and yeah, try and get in early and book some tickets to go and see his show. His name's Luke Wright, and yeah, the links will be in this episode now if you're listening on Acast, and yeah, we'll put them up as well, obviously, where you can get tickets and stuff to his show in next week's episode when you hear his podcast. It was really, really good. So I hope you enjoy that. I hope you subscribe so that automatically gets downloaded into your device, wherever you get your podcasts. So yeah, get in touch. Let me know anything you like, really. Let me know if you think it's good, if you think it's bad, if I'm doing right, if I'm doing wrong. It's been 2 months now, so you should have formed an opinion of me. I'd like to hear it. Until next week, ta-ta.